like him inside and outside. Blew his house with a blue little window and a blue Corvette, and everything is blue for him and himself and everybody around, 'cause he ain't got nobody to listen to.
I'm blue, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died. I'm blue, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been
himself and everybody around, 'cause he ain't got nobody to listen to.
I'm blue, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died. I'm blue, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died, I've been deed, I've been died.
To CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, Anthasiahuya, Talitin, Ho Musqueam Mustail.
Welcome to Community Living Show here on the NCRE Radio Networks and our flagship hour station, CITR 101.9 FM.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
Welcome to Community Living Show here on the NCRE Radio Networks. I am Kelly Rayburn, also known as DJ Ray on the late night show, but you can call me Kelly during the daytime. And we have Michael across from me.
Hello, Kelly.
Hello, Michael. I will adjust your microphone here.
Okay,
there we go.
Is that better?
That's a little better. All right, okay. So we have a show for you today, so take it away, Michael.
Well, I've been trying to...
Go on.
Okay. I'm trying could to get one a hold of...
The
micro- of...
Could be one of the headsets that is...
Yeah, let me... Sure
adjustable. Technical okay. difficulties here, folks.
Yeah. That...
All right.
Okay.
Okay, let's do this.
Okay, we'll try this again. we were supposed to have a guest today, and her name was Jo Dibley, but I've been trying to get a hold of her, and I guess she didn't make it, make the trip into Vancouver to do the show, because she doesn't actually live locally. So, and I was maybe I would try to get her on the phone. To help the situation out here, and it's going straight to voicemail. So,
oh dear.
Yeah. So I guess we can. She's a author, and the name of her book is Frock Off, and basically she.
excuse me.
She overcame being a victim of what was known as the killer from the Highway of Tears. She overcame that, and I really wanted to tell her story because it's very inspirational how she went from being a victim slash witness to being more or less a hero, because she didn't give up on herself. She kept moving forward, no matter what happened. She just kept moving forward with this, even like some of the phases of media that wanted to focus solely on her having seen a mass murder, that they wanted to focus on that rather than focus on who she was as a person and how she overcame the torment of knowing that she had come that close to contact to a mass murder. So so it really is an important story. And here on her website is frockoff.com. That's frock/off.com. So and off her website, she's saying that it's not a memoir. It is written in memory of a little girl who was murdered by a man who assaulted me at 16. Susan Doe lost her life at the hands of a predator when she was 12 years old. In the times of my life when I was frocking up. Hang on. Can we take a break?
No. Sorry, I thought I was... doing a phone call here. So, I thought that was someone else's phone number. Sorry, continue on. Go on.
Susan was my guiding angel, and I carry her picture with me always. For over 15 years, was the key witness for the RCMP in a murder case, and I lived disguised out of fear and necessity. Frocks protected me, but they also ruled my life. So, like I said, her story is very inspirational of how she overcame and finally gets control of her life. So some of that is in the book, and some of that I just wanted to bring out in the interview. So
Okay.
So that's who we wanted to have today. And unfortunately, that didn't work out. So I'll keep trying to get a hold of her for the rest of the day, maybe, and see if we can reschedule that.
Okay.
So
I'm just figuring out what we want to listen to here. On our, if we want to get a chance to listen to the YouTube. Do you want to listen to some Ricky Shetty?
Sure.
This one is on Tixie Canada. And he has some important information on some things.
Yeah.
Greetings, everyone. There's a casino, and we're right next to the casino at the Tix headquarters. So this is Tix here. You'll see the big sign, and it's free parking all around as well. So this is all the free parking area here. So we'll see you in a bit, and looking forward to escaping the escape room here at Tix.
Okay, so that was a little short one.
Yeah.
A little introductory of Tix.
Ricky does have a new thing that he's starting with, that One Simple Action.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can find...
I'll have a look at it. In the meantime, any other issues you want to focus on?
There was something else that I did want to talk about, and as you said it slipped my slipped my head. It's one of those things that you hate it when that sort of thing happens. Well, let's talk a little bit about the One Simple Action.
Well, you did one business expert. You want to have a upload? You want to have a check on that?
Yeah.
Sure. This one is on three marketing mistakes.
That one is going to be, it's not a very long one either.
Oh, it's not a very long one.
No, that one's a rather short one.
Okay.
It's
how about the testament for Greta McCartney? What was that all about?
Greta. Her name is Gita.
Gita.
Gita is a media expert, and she teaches business owners and those who have an important message how to get themselves put out there in front of the media.
Okay.
And for those of you who are listening, they have a really important message. This even works with getting in front of Kelly and I.
Another Kelly.
You and I.
Oh, okay.
Because it works for any level of media.
Yes.
Instead of most traditionally with print media, you did what was called a press release.
Okay.
And which meant that you sent a letter into the local press, and if they liked what they saw, they would contact you and print a story about you.
Okay.
Well,
so it's about a minute long. Maybe we can talk about that, and then
And so then, go ahead and play the clip.
Okay. And then we'll come right back. We're going to do some announcements after that. So we'll come right back after that, and then announcements. This is the Community Living.
Hi, my name is Michael Rubin, and I'm with the Marketing Anvil. And I would like to talk to you today about Gita and explain to you that she is an expert in her field, and she is an expert of getting business owners media. Her way of getting media is to actually pitch to the media and show them the benefits of using you in front of the camera, and showing that you do have an expertise and that you should be in front of the camera speaking to the public. Instead of the old-fashioned way of using press releases, instead pitch the media and show them that you can get the job done and help them add value to their shows. Again, thank you again, Gita, for this wonderful lesson, and I hope to see you in front of my camera on the Business Expert Show.
lousy smarch weather.
This issue of Discorder, there's no more Discorder. Discorder is over. Vancouver housing crisis, commercial plates, lots of floods, Richmond underwater. There's no more Discorder ever. There's no more Discorder ever. There's no more Discorder ever. There's no more Discorder ever. Discorder ever.
Spring is here. This April, pick up an issue of Discorder from a local venue or record store for articles on Sumac, Snit, Saradovacci, Record Store Day, and more. Special thanks to this month's advertisers, Levitation Fest, Rickshaw Theater, Light Organ Records, Beat Merchant, Red Cat Records, Neptune Records, Horses Records, Audiopile Records, Dandelion Emporium, High Life Records, Vinyl Records, Live Van, and AMS Events.
April makes fools of us all.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. I am Kelly along with Michael.
And hello again, Kelly.
Oh, again. Yes.
So, I guess Jada's thing was pretty simple. It was like, if you want to wind up on the media, tell them exactly what it is that you want to say, and what the benefit of it is that you of your message. And lo and behold, you should find your way on the road to some sort of media connection. So, rather than sending press releases, because press releases are cold and boring.
Right.
It's like, show the excitement.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I found something from Ricky Shetty. There's a founder of DaddyBlogger.com, and Alexander Zustin is interviewing with Ricky Shetty. Do you want to hear that?
Sure.
It's about 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Here it is.
And Daddy Blogger Ricky Shetty. How are you, Ricky?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on the show today, Alex.
Absolutely. Ricky here is a master blogger. He does a lot of community involvement and classes and courses for dads, for new dads, and bloggers as well. Right, Ricky?
Yeah, so I'm from Vancouver, Canada here, and I run events for dads once a month, dads to hang out, and I also run events for bloggers. So I do monthly events. I also do a workshop, and I'm doing a two-day conference just to teach people all about blogging.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. It goes to show how much there is in blogging, really. So, Ricky, you're also a dad.
Yeah, I got two kids. I got a little girl who's 3 years old, and I got a little boy who's 1 year old. So they definitely keep us busy. Two little kids, both under five. It's, I would say, a challenging time now just because they require so much attention, and they're not fully independent yet. So, yeah, it's been a fun journey being a dad of two little ones.
Absolutely. So how do you do that? I mean, having all of these engagements and working in the blog, and also being a father and really putting all of this effort into your children.
Yeah, great question. So, you know, my wife and me, we co-parent, and we try to make it work. I mean, it's obviously challenging. My wife's working full time, and I work from home. So this is my home office. As you can see, this is my living room here, and I don't even have a private office. So basically, I'm just working with the kids around. They're in the background right now playing. And I get stuff done around their schedule. So, for example, when they're having a nap, then I'll be more productive. Obviously, when they're going to sleep at the end of the night, I'm more productive again. And in between, I sometimes I'll just have appointments at home. Like if I have any business appointments, I'll just invite people over and I'll say, hey, I have the kids with me. Is it okay if we just meet at home? And they'll play. And it actually helps build up the relationship, the business relationship, when I'm just really highly personal. So I find I've made it work. Obviously, there are times when I'm trying to do things like this, interviews, and the kids will be screaming behind me and wanting my attention. Yeah, we just make it work. It's not an easy job, but hey, I wouldn't trade this for anything in the world. I'm really blessed that I don't have to work a 9-to-5 job, that I can invest quality time in the life of my kids. And I'm sure as they grow up, they really appreciate the time they got to spend with their dads.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very important. I mean, the fact that you really build your schedule around their schedule, it gives you tremendous opportunity to be a part of their life. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So, Ricky, how long have you been actually doing blogging? How long have you had your own blog? I'm going to bring it into it.
I started my blog, daddyblogger.com, in December of 2012. So it's already been running almost 2.5 years. And, you know, like any other blogger, when I was starting out, I was still building it up, trying to build up the branding around my blog, building up the readership, doing things like email marketing, social media marketing, doing a lot of video blogging. One of the cool things I did is I did a lot of interviews. So I interviewed over 100 dads just to get the buzz out there, because whenever I interviewed a dad, those dads were shared with their network. And, you know, and then for the first 6 months, there was no money coming in. I was just doing it because I wanted to share my reflections about being a dad. And I got a little bit frustrated because I was like, I'm doing, putting all this work in, but no money came coming in. And then, you know, about maybe about 6 months into it, the money started coming in, like different sponsors. At first it was really me reaching out and trying to get different advertisers and sponsors. And then slowly I got higher in Google rankings. So people started finding me. And now I find I'm getting, maybe 2 or 3 emails a week, at least, asking me to work with them. Sometimes it's just like a trade. They'll send me a product and then in return I'll write a review. But lately, more and more, I've been saying no to just freebies because at the end of the day, it takes my time and effort and energy to write a blog post and share it with my network. So I'm more focused on, they call it sponsored posts, so actually getting paid to write blog posts. And yeah, I've been able to build up a steady income on my blog every month. Right now, it's hitting between 500 to 1,000 a month on my blog. So it's not full-time income yet on the blog, but at least it's some part-time income that I can generate just from working from home. And then I also run different events to kind of subsidize and make more money.
Sure, absolutely. That's beautiful. What would you recommend for somebody who's really just starting out blogging or has been doing it for a while and they feel frustrated like you were?
Yeah, one of my big tips I would give people who are just starting out is don't just build a blog, build up a brand around your blog. So the brand should be everything to do with brand imaging. Like if you look at the big brands, they do it really well. They have like good logos, good graphics, a good website design, a free email offer, and a good visual overall. So when people go there, it shouldn't just look like it just put together really amateurly, but it should look like highly professional and highly branded. So I would say first is the brand image. It's really important to the success of blogging, because if you want to work with brands, you got to realize you're a brand yourself. And if these big brands are going to pay you money, they're not just going to work with some amateur blogger. They're going to look at someone who's really built up their own branding. So first rule of blogging is build a brand around your blog. And then some of the other tips I would say is focus on different marketing channels to build up your readership. So I would say the number one marketing tool would be email marketing and social media marketing. You know, almost all of your readers, all of your potential sponsors and advertisers, they're all on social media. So build up your Facebook fan page, your Twitter following, even your LinkedIn, your Pinterest, your Instagram, your Google+, do some video blogging. So I really look at it like holistically build up your entire social media world around your blog. And then also build up your email list. So no, don't just collect the emails, but send out something regular, like a monthly newsletter, sharing about your favorite blog posts, maybe some contests, etc. So I find email marketing, social media marketing, video marketing are really important. And then things like guest blog posting. So like, you know, for our case, like you could do a guest blog on my site. I could do one on yours and I share it, you share it. So it helps us both out, Alex. Also interviewing each other, right? So that's a great way as well. Basically, I'll interview you, you interview me, and we both share it. It helps us both. Because I have readers, you know, a lot of my readers are locally, and I'm sure a lot of your readers are local at first too. So basically it gives you a chance to reach a Canadian market in Vancouver and gives me a chance to reach a New York market in the US. So I would say doing interviews and maybe running contests too. Like once you start working sponsors, you can run some contests. And with contests, basically, you don't have to do anything in terms of the shipping or the cost of the prize. All you have to do is run the contest and the sponsor would actually pay for the prize and also they pay for the shipping right to the winner's home. And I do a lot of networking too. So I go to different networking events and, when I network, I'll say, hey, you know, it's great meeting you. Since you're a fellow dad, make sure you check out my blog and I'll give them a business card. So those are some of the tips that I, found really helpful for me.
Beautiful. So you actually, I mean, it's really interesting. The whole branding of your blog, really like a professional marketer with a real product and a real benefit for everybody. The fact that you have business cards, I really like.
Yeah, like I look at it like at the end of the day, my blog is not just a blog, it's a hobby. I look at it very much as a viable business. I have a market, I have a readership, I have a network, I have products and services I can offer. I have a revenue stream, I have financials. I look at it like if you're running any business as an entrepreneur, you got to first have your branding, then figure out your blog, mission, vision, and values, figure out who your niche market is, providing them with quality value and content, and then figure out a product or service that your readers or clients, if you want to call it that, really need. So just look at your blog as any other business.
Beautiful, beautiful. I don't know really if I have any more questions, but I want to thank you because I know you do a lot of work for the community. Bringing people together, really bringing people to raising the awareness of fatherhood and what it is and what it should be. And I think we need more people like you out there, you know, fighting the good fight and raising the awareness for being good parents.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you're doing that as well. We definitely need resources for dads. You know, us dads, we don't have any resources. Usually it's so mom-centric, right? All the books and all the blogs and all the resources, the meetings, the groups, they're so mom-centric, us dads, so we kind of feel left out. So I'm glad what you're doing, Alex, with your blog and being actively involved with your son. And all we need is like other dads to do that. Like, I'm just focusing on where I'm living. You're just focusing on where you're living, and we need that in every city, in every major place in the world.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Ricky, and I'm looking forward to being in touch.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on, Alex.
Take care.
Alexander Schussen interviewing with Ricky Shetty, founder of DaddyBlocker.com. Guess who's on the line?
Joe Dibley.
Joe Dibley.
Yes.
Introduce who
she is again from her book is Frock Off, and she has a really interesting story about how she has overcome and a really tragic happening in her life and how she's actually overcome and adapted and become a real hero in her own life and others. So,
all right. Hello there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You both.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joe, I tried to do a really good introduction, but your story is so unique that it's really, really difficult to put it out there without involving some type of negativity. So why don't you start by telling people why it is that you wrote your book.
Absolutely, and thank you again, because anytime we can talk about it and create awareness, that's when we see the change. And I love what you're both doing and being part of that. for myself, I was a witness in a murder investigation. So although it is a story of a lot of tragedy, it ends really well. Number one, I'm alive, and I always think that's a very positive. And also that I know that we can be that change when we speak about these things. So I wrote Frockhoff Living Undisguised in hopes of bringing to the forefront the challenges that we're facing. For me, the reason I was a witness is I had been assaulted when I was 15 by a foster parent who unfortunately raped me. And when I got away, I wasn't believed by the police because it was one of the best foster parents in Penticton. Short version of that story is by the time they did believe me, he had already murdered a little girl I knew. And he had told me he would finish the job and hurt everyone I loved and cared about. And so when it happened, I was one of 26 girls he had assaulted and that had lived. But of those 26, only one of us was willing to stand for what had happened and to say, yes, I will be a witness against him. And it was me. I spent 35 years in hiding as a result of it and have had 19 names and moved 51 times and had 7 passports. But at the end, what happens is we're talking about it because the system is still broken. I don't blame the police or social services. What I say is that we have a problem. Let's put it on the table. Let's talk about it. And let's show that even through the most dark, bleak moments, we can still reclaim our own lives.
Mm-hmm. So, who was the person in the? You don't have to give names or anything like that, but who was this person in the community that the police were willing to overlook your story and quite blatantly side with your attacker?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was, you know, just say a classic, normal-looking person functioning in society, but as a foster parent, they had taken in many, many children. I don't know the exact number of children that went through that house, but they were recognized, him and his wife were recognized as, you know, the one of the best foster parent homes in Penticton. And what I want to say, so that I don't alienate anyone, and also to recognize there are amazing foster parents mm-hmm. out there. There are amazing people working in the social service field that are trying to place kids that are in jeopardy. And quite honestly, we wouldn't need to be in a foster parent situation if we came from a, well, high-functioning home, or even a normal home, if there's such a thing. But he was a foster parent.
Wow. You know, I was a foster parent myself, so that's in. I can see some of the problems with that. How you can evade truth or whatever, and get in the system with mm-hmm. that. That is a very broken system.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. So how did you learn to because you said you've had so many passports, so name changes, things like that. So how did you move forward with your life so that you would no longer be the victim and you would start to become the hero in the community?
Mm, thank you. That's a great question. I get asked quite frequently why I'm not angry and how I did it. And, you know, just to touch on the anger piece, I'm not angry because it serves no one or nothing. And then the situation, he wins. I spent 35 years in hiding. I didn't want to spend my whole life in fear and hiding anymore. But how I did it was a little bit of, you know, I'd say not just roll up my sleeves, but I had people that would pass into my life that knew nothing of my story, but that were just kind people that provided some sense of, you know, hope and inspiration. I had, in the book I write about, I had a pretend grandpa. And when I say pretend, it's because he wasn't my biological grandfather, but he just told me I had worth in the world. And I say often to people, never underestimate, you know, that a kind word or a gesture. And it all sounds cliche, but it is totally true, it's provable, it's measurable, that you could be the difference in someone's life. And so I had what I referred to as eight earth angels. They weren't they didn't know anything about my story. Nothing. Because I wasn't telling anyone. After he killed Susan, and of course where I came from, Susan Duff is the little girl whose life he took. And I don't use his name, not because of legal reasons, but because I think we talk far too much about perpetrators. But for those that are listening and that want to know more about the case, you can go on to Cold Cases and look up Susan Duff, and you'll find some information about what was done or what happened. But for myself, the how was really about owning my space and saying, I don't think so. This is not anymore. And I'm not saying that was easy. It took me a long time. But it was slow steps to saying, I need to step up and stand up for others. And in doing so, I will have my own voice. And that's why it's written from a place of hope and inspiration. It talks about what happened, but it's not dwelling on his part in this story.
I totally agree with the idea that that we do put too much emphasis on the perpetrator, not enough emphasis on the victim or the families that surrounded that person.
Exactly. And I think, you know, if you look at this type of a crime, more than any other crime, you as the person that's been victimized are guilty versus the other way around. Because the repercussions of me falsely accusing you, if that happened, are so devastating that they weigh heavily towards the perpetrator's rights versus the victim's rights.
Right.
And I understand both sides of the fence. We just need to do something different to change it. We need to stop the weight being so heavily towards the other person. And if falsely accused, so for example, if I was that person that would falsely accuse someone, there has to be some sort of consequence for me, because that is a reality. But we can't weigh so heavily for the good of the few to wipe out the good of the many, and that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I mean, even when you look at like all the we have television that actually pushes more towards the the perpetrator. It's like he becomes the star of the show, and the person that's the victim kind of falls by the wayside, you know.
Oh, it's 100% true. In fact, I've been interviewed by some very well-known TV documentaries in Canada,
right,
who I've spent hours interviewing with. I would say, you know, some only a couple of hours and others up to 10. And then when it came down to it, if the focus was only on the death and the murder and just the acts that he perpetrated, then I would not agree to go forward with the interview, because truthfully, it doesn't define who I am. And my whole mission and my goal is to have people read the story and understand that no matter what has happened, we aren't defined by that moment. We can't celebrate, because in essence, when we talk about, you know, the glorification or the, you know, this whole putting this other person sharing their story, we're basically giving far more credit to the person who's done it. And by the way, if you're a serial rapist or a serial killer, that's your whole goal, is to get that notoriety. So why are we perpetuating that? That's what we have to stop. And we have to empower people with the idea and the tools to be that change in their own life. Otherwise, we're not going to change it.
Yeah. I guess you just said something I hadn't thought about, that the whole goal would be for them to commit the act so that they can get in front of the camera on, you know, have their story appearing in the news and in front of, wow, that's a very interesting pill to have to swallow. Instead of, it should go the other way around.
It should, and we should stop the, you know, there's a lot of shame that comes from any kind of sexual assault. A lot of shaming in general, a little bit, you know, as I said, my story, I wouldn't have met the foster parent if I had come from a home where everything was fine. so to speak. My parents both were mentally ill. My father got my mom into prostitution. I'm a byproduct of, you know, I'd say it tongue-in-cheek, but not out of disrespect for my parents, but it seems fitting that I was conceived in the oldest profession, and now I'm an entrepreneur. I mean, it just seems fitting to me. I think we need to stop putting things in such taboo light. Whatever, you know, whether it, to me it's just another form of discrimination or alienation. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just put stuff on the table and talk about it? Even I heard the tail end of your last interview. I 100% agree that things are mom-centered. I know that things are changing because my husband, when I met my husband, his son was 11, and he lived primarily with us. But there is a disconnect. We need to keep talking. That's how we're going to change it. We need to keep creating awareness. And the serial killer or rapist position, I did a ton of studies trying to figure out why this happened. There isn't a why, but it is their goal to live their legacy by taking what they want.
All right, is it Joe or Zoe?
Yeah, it's Joe.
It's Joe. Yeah. We're going to take a break in a moment, so can you hold on for a moment?
Absolutely.
All right, so we'll put her on hold, and we'll come right back in just a moment. We're going to take some goodies and stuff. So this is the Community Living Show here on, of course, we're on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM, and across the province of BC on the NCRA Radio Networks.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Yes, of course, that's coming up around from noon to 1. About a couple more hours to go right here on the flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. And, of course, we are on the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're talking to Joe
Dibley. Yes.
Who is?
She is the author of Frock Off.
All right.
Joe, you there?
I'm here.
That's good. So, we talked about some issues on foster care and foster affiliates. Are you yourself a foster parent?
You know, I'm not, but I've definitely been, I was never formally a foster parent, but I have definitely raised other people's children or been involved or been a place where we've had an open door policy for people that have been in distress or what have you. And I was always of the belief, you know, my children, for example, my children are grown, and I was always of the belief, I would like you to bring your friends over so I knew you were safe. And we ended up acquiring extra children. I actually had two children that I gave birth to, and at some points we had 4 and 6 children living in our house as they were growing up. And then, as you know, when I made reference to my husband and Justin, who was 11, often it would be, yes, you can come stay with us. And we had children that would, you know, stay with us, not overnight, but stay with us for periods of time. But for me, it's about providing a safe place to land and showing our youth that they have value. Because what we fail to forget when we don't do this properly is those children are going to go out and live as adults. And what are they? What's their impact in the world? So, yes and no, not formally.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually that was how I wound up with extra children in my house.
I bet that is, because that's what happened, right?
What we wound up doing was we actually went back into the system again and it got the kids processed so that certain things would actually would happen, and it was through that so many kids just wanted to. They were in disagreement with their parents. I don't want to say that they were rebelling. But disagreements were happening, and it opened up the door for a dialogue between everyone, so that everybody came back together as a whole family. So, and that's supposed to be the ultimate goal of the whole foster system, and it doesn't exactly seem to work that way.
Well, I do think that there are many people that come into it with the right intentions, good intentions, and have the heart and the desire to be that change in whatever child may come through their home. I do think there are other people that use it as a vehicle for access. And I do think our system's better. You have to remember, I'm 54. So when my situation happened, it was far more prevalent. There was a lot of things going on, not just in the foster care system, but and not as a slam, but in the Catholic Church, for example. So the truth of this is that we are only going to change it when we talk about it, because as long as we are talking, we are creating awareness, and then we have to take some action. But without awareness, we can't even take action. We don't know where to begin. We're consciously or unconsciously incompetent until we have discussion.
Yes, that's the whole point. Is everybody has to talk in order to recognize the problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I guess it's some of the okay.
That's not mine.
I thought I just put all of my phones on silent. Oh God.
That's okay.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, we'll move forward.
Hopefully we'll let it go, and there goes
life.
Having had extra kids in your home and everything like that, what would you see as one of the initiatives that to help make the fostering system even better?
I would say that there has to be a stronger, perhaps more stringent process criteria, and perhaps also more, I would, for lack of a better way of saying this, courses that equip some foster parents, because I know some foster parents that have gone through thinking, you know, great intention, great heart, their children, they were great parents, but they weren't equipped, because we only come from what we know. So prime example would be, often when I speak, people will come up to me and say, you know, Joe, some bad things happened to me too, but they're not as tragic as yours. And I always stop them dead in their tracks and say, whoa, that's not true, because your norm is your norm. So now let's take someone, I'm just painting a picture, because I live in the suburbs on the island, okay?
That's fine.
So I live in the suburbs. I've raised my kids. I've never really seen a whole lot of horrific things. I've experienced normal life, if we can call that. We've had tragedy, but it's normal stuff. And now I take in a foster child who's experienced horrific things. I'm not prepared.
No.
I don't know how to even help this child. And so that is why I think there's also a breakdown. It's not this. It's not a person necessarily not caring. It's a lack of understanding and awareness.
Yeah, that is very true. It's like everybody has a different idea of normal and a different skill set, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess the fostering system can use with a better education of those who are taking in children, you know.
Just so that we can prepare everyone, because this is, I don't see any of this as a, you should have, or, you know, finger pointing. I don't see that. What I see it as is equipping each person, whether it's the foster parent or even the child, to get the best possible outcome, because what we're doing today is going to affect them in the future, and they then, you know, the pattern keeps rolling out. That's why we know there are certain situations. If we use, you know, the stories of the up and coming or neighborhoods that are, you know, just in a complete chaos, if we use that and we go, well, that just keeps repeating itself, it only repeats itself because we don't have an awareness, education, and an opportunity to talk openly. We don't want to shame any more than we want to bully. We need to stop that and look at people and, you know, get them where they are and work with them there, rather than saying, well, you should this, you should that. That's useless, actually.
Yeah, right. That isn't a productive dialogue. So, what would you see as being the more productive dialogue?
I think what needs to happen is, as we gather. So let's pretend, for sake, or let's just assume we're having a intake of people that want to become foster parents. What I'd love to see is people that have been doing this a long time and have had great success, almost, for lack of a better way of saying this, mentoring people that are getting into it, because they need to know that when they encounter something, for example, it's okay if they're freaked out. It's okay if that's the first time they've encountered it. You know, there are behaviors, for example, that children exhibit when they've been assaulted, that someone who's never seen that, that would freak somebody out. Like, let's just put it on the table. So I'm talking about having open dialogue just to say, this is what's going on, or this is how we've dealt with it, and backup systems in place so that those, that they can go and get more information. Now, if someone else was on this call, they'd say, but that's already there, not to the extent that it needs to be.
Just put it on the table and talk about it.
Because isn't it true that when we stand together and we share our differences, we find they're all pretty common, actually? It doesn't matter what level they're at. They're still pretty common.
You always manage to find some kind of common ground, right?
So it sounds simple. It sounds common sense. But we all know it's not common practice. It's not common practice. It's common sense.
Two different things, right?
Absolutely. And if we, you know, we ruled the world, but we have to start somewhere. This is where we start, is by open dialogue and not being afraid to say there's a problem. Let's at least start the dialogue, and then let's celebrate things that are working and change what's not. You know, rinse and repeat comes to mind because I'm a business owner, but rinse and repeat good things is a good thing. It's just that simple.
It seems like we're rinsing and repeating those things that aren't necessarily working.
We are, because there's still so much shame and you know, guilt around. Okay, so if I was the parent and I didn't handle something well, let's talk about things that aren't even, so to speak, as heinous as assault, okay? So let's say I was a stressed out mom or a stressed out dad, and my child had been crying for 6 hours straight, and I went outside my house and walked around the block. Nothing more. I just went for a short walk, but I left my child in the house, it may be in their crib. Right. Am I a horrible parent, or am I just someone who needed to do something so I could just take a breather? Should I do that? Probably not. I wouldn't do it. But I had a thought. So a thought about, I was 19 when I had my daughter. Okay, I got married when I was 18, had my daughter when I was 19. I was a young woman, you know, but I wasn't an average parent age, okay?
Yeah.
I had my daughter. She had a problem with her stomach. She had been crying for for months, actually. I was going to say days. It was 3 months. I kept taking her back to the doctor. The doctor kept saying to me, you're an overachiever. You don't know how to do this because you're just a brand new mom. It's okay. Give yourself a break. Well, Chantel had a problem with her stomach. She threw up all the time. She cried all the time. And one day I got on the bus to take her back home from the doctor's appointment. I sat down. She was screaming. I write about this in the book. She was screaming uncontrollably. And I looked at her, and for 30 seconds, now keep in mind I'm 54.
Yes.
For 30 seconds, I thought, I should leave her on the bus because somebody else would be a way better parent than me. 30 seconds. I didn't leave her on the bus. I didn't. A woman who had this thick Scottish accent kind of must have been sent from heaven above, looked over at me and said, it's okay. Because another woman was looking at me like I was a terrible parent. We need to stop judging other people. Like, I'm on a soapbox, I know that, and I apologize, but this is the problem. It starts with us being more compassionate and looking for ways to change it. We don't need to judge anybody. I didn't leave my daughter. Did I mention I'm 54? That same guilt feeling still comes up.
Just but a bad feeling, am I right?
You know that guilt feeling?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a dad of five. And it's like, you know, that guilt feeling is like, gee, I should have done that differently. I should have.
Yeah.
It's like, what I found out was, is that guilt feeling meant that I was a good parent.
Exactly. But when you're 19, hon,
you don't see it.
You're not even equipped to think like that. Yeah. You are just, I am a terrible parent. People were right. I'm too young. You know, she'd be better off with someone else. Well, we know how well foster care worked out for me, so I wasn't putting her there. But in the moment, I just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And although I still, you know, I didn't leave her and I did get off the bus with her, I still remember what that felt like. And I think, you know, even being able to tell that now from a, you know, well, number one, it's in the book, so it's out there.
Yeah.
But being able to say it out loud and standing on stages and talking about, okay, so we're not freaking perfect. That's okay. Or I like to say frocking. We're not. We don't have to be perfect. We have to be real and find ways to, you know, figure it out and source out and have access. And certainly if someone comes and tells that story to another person, don't judge them.
No.
You know, because you're not perfect.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, with the age of 19 when you had your daughter, it was almost similar to myself and my natural mom, but only my natural mom was about 21 when she had me. And she learned how to control the situation of being as a parent and trying to train how to train me as myself, but at the same time she couldn't take care of herself. She had some sort of mental sickness. She had some sort of a bad situation there. And there were a few times leaving from Toronto going over to Winnipeg was where she had a mental breakdown. And that was the time where I had to go to a temporary foster care at the time until she felt the need of being a parent again.
You and I have, you know, a lot of similarities. When we talked and we first met, I knew that the interview would flow easily because of that. My mom had a nervous breakdown when I was 2.5 years old, and my brother had been really sick, but my mom had suffered mental illness her whole life, and my father was bipolar and had PTSD and ended up taking his life. So, you know, I understand what happens, and they did the best with what they had. And guess what? Neither of them came from a great place either.
Yeah.
So I can't. This is why for me when people say, you know, they'll even say to me, aren't you mad at your parents? Like, no. Why? What would be the point? Not to mention, they didn't have, you know, they had no rose garden. Mom left home at 13. it's not stellar. She can't, you can't parent somebody when you leave home at 13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well, I'm going to have to leave it there, but thank you very much for having a time to talk to us.
Oh, I'm honored. I'm so honored. I thank you for allowing me to share the message. You know, Frock Off, Living Undisguised has been, for me, I birthed my other baby, which was the book, and we're now number 3 in the world for true crime, hope, and inspiration. And my goal is just to get it into people's hands so they know that there is, mm-hmm. we're not defined by the yeah. moments in our life. We're defined by the choices we make and how we react and yeah. what we do with it.
So thank you. Tell everybody how to get the book.
Oh, you can get the book on Amazon at amazon.ca or .com, but for Canadians, obviously, .ca. Or if I'm speaking at live events, and I do live events throughout Western Canada right now, we have a big event actually coming up in a few days at Tynemera in Parkville, where we're bringing in speakers to help people reclaim their life and or grow their career or business. But if you're looking for the book, amazon.ca is your best place to get it.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for all the great work you're doing.
All right. Okay. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that was Jim.
Yeah.
So that's it for the program.
Yes.
And we will be back next week, same time, same station. So this has been Community Living Show. We leave you now with the Pack AD. Bye, everybody.
Hello, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC in Vancouver. This is A Face for Radio. I am your host, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to get right into the show. Today's topic is the finish line, because I am just over 24 hours away from finishing my school year. But before we begin talking about all that, I am going to start us off with some music. And this is a song by a Turkish rock and roller, I guess would be the proper term. Her name is Selda, and the song is İnce İnce Bir Kar Yağar, I hope. That's how it's pronounced, off the eponymous album Selda from 1976. And the title in English, apparently according to Google Translate, means thin oil, light snow. So enjoy some thin oil and light snow.
what you like, what I like. Why can't we both be right?